Okay, I want to do the Gemara today, Daf Zayin, that is discussing more. I don't know what we spoke about last time, but I think we were discussing more about what's that?
Starting to run it.
Oh, good. So this is the end of this Gemara, and I want to discuss it today. And really, it's talking about, you know, as all these Gemaras do, Darshan Sukkim, it's discussing what happened at the Sneh, the burning bush, you know. So it says there that Moshe Rabbeinu, we know the story, that Moshe Rabbeinu was wandering around in the desert. I'm still not exactly sure how he got to Har Sinai from Midian. You know, he went for a little walk into the Midbar, wandered all the way to the middle of the Sinai desert. But wherever he was walking, and he happened to go on what would the future be, Har Sinai. And he sees this snare. Oil beige, you know, burning in fire, and it's not being consumed. Now, the truth is, this was already the beginning of a, what should I say, prophetic vision, you know, this fire burning away and not consuming the bush that was burning, which is probably an image of Am Yisrael, as I'll say, in Mitzrayim, Nais, of being able to exist in Mitzrayim and not being able, not being consumed. Anyway, so he has this moment, should I look, it's just a little bush, it wasn't like this huge forest fire, you know, a little tiny bush burning. So he said, you know, should I look and go and see, you know, he turns to look and see what's happening. And all of a sudden Hashem sees that he turns, you know, decides to take a look, and all of a sudden, stage number two, all of a sudden an angel starts speaking from the middle of the flame to him. That's a higher level of prophecy already. And the angel tells them, Moshe, yeah, take your shoes off. I must kodesh you, you're standing on holy ground. You gotta take your shoes off. Which, as I'll say, is the angels was there to tell him that you have to prepare yourself to a higher level of nevuah already. And taking your shoes off is always a symbol of preparing yourself for nevuah, because the shoe represents the body of the person, just like the shoe, is sort of the lowest level of the body, that, you know, the lower end of the foot fits into the shoe, and there's a whole body above. So also, it's considered to be the shoe is like the body of the person, and then there's a whole soul that fits into that shoe. You know, I told the Agamemnon Marshall once about story by the Rav was, you know, walking home. He goes into the house, and one of his kids comes up and says, why are you so dirty? So he says, nobody knew what he was talking about. He looked fine, you know. Why are you so dirty? He was a little boy. So he looked down, and the cuff of his pants was covered with mud because he walked through a construction line. So I say, when you're a big person, you know, you see the whole human being, so then you don't ask the question, you don't see anything. But when you're this high, when you're tiny, so then all of a sudden you see someone, you see the dirt. So I say, in regards to how we look at every people, we're about this high. So we're all like 1 foot off the ground. And when we see other people, what do we see about them? We see the cuff of their pants, you know, we see the shoe, and maybe we feel like we see the depth of the person, we see like a little bit of the ankle fitting in, you know, a little sock, you know. And, you know, that's what we see. We see the lowest level. As a result, sometimes somebody does something wrong. We don't like what they do. You know, we're ready to throw people out and get rid of them, you know. But it says in Kodesh Baruch Hu, when he looks at the person, he also sees that, but he sees the whole body inside that shoe. A person has, like Rav Obersliff used to say, a person has, you know, 20 stories above. Most of us live in our conscious awareness on the first floor. You know, he used to say, most of us live on the first floor. You have a skyscraper, you know. So most of us live on the first floor, and that's all we see. We see eye level, you know. So I would ask you to explain, like, to describe in Rehov Yafa, like, what does the street look like, you know, above the first floor? Most people wouldn't even know what's there. You know, they just know the eye level. So he used to say, came Freud, you know, the famous psychologist, and so he went into the basement, right. And he started digging all sorts of things in the basement. He finds these boxes that are all closed up, and he starts opening them up, and letting out this, you know, smell of rotten fish or whatever is there, you know. Yeah, so he used to say, the Gita person may have basically said, but you know, there's another 20 stories above that are still untouched. You know, nobody speaks about it in that way. Of all of this to say. So also, anyway, so that's the klala. Kosh Baruch Hu looks at the person, he sees the whole person. He also sees the shoe of the person. He's able to see the mud on the cup. But he knows the whole person. So that's what we call rachamim. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is much more merciful than we are, because we have a much deeper vision of humanity than we have, and therefore he's able to see the potentials of a human being, and that changes how you look at a human being when they do something wrong. You know, we have that vision. So, in short, the angels has take off. That's why in Chalitza also you take off the shoe of the person, because the person doesn't want to get married, they're evil, he doesn't want to marry his brother's wife and give a body to hold, to bring this brother's soul back into this world. Right? It's called the shoe, he doesn't want to avoid another shoe, so to speak. Anyway, so the angel comes out and says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, you know, take your shoes off. You're on holy ground here. You got to take your shoe, which is a way of saying he's already reached two levels of prophecy, but now the purpose of the second level is just to prepare him. And that means, you know, don't identify with your body as being you, but try to grasp the part of you that's within, that's much higher and deeper than that. Take off, you know, they call it hispashtus agashmius, you know, take off your body. And like this is when a person, davens, he's supposed to feel as if he removed his body, as if a person removes a coat, they just take it off and hang it up. So it says, tzaddikim don't really die, the shikas tzaddikim, when they die, tzaddikim don't die. Only Rishoyim suffer from death. You know, it's like, you know, like the Gemara says, you know, pulling, you know, cotton out of a thorn bush. Oh. You know what I mean? You know. But tzaddikim, they just take off their coat, hang it up on the thing, and move on. They never identified with it anyway. You know, that's all it is for them. That's all. You take off your coat, and hang it up. Go inside. You know? That's Mises of tzaddikim. And when a person does spiritual things, obviously when we daven, the trick of davening is to forget about all the physical things that we're concerned about and try to focus on the words of the tefillah and lift ourselves up. That takes a tremendous amount of mental energy to forget about Olam Hazeh. Anytime anybody tries to daven with Kavana knows, you know, that as you continually are dragged into Olam Hazeh again. You know, oh, what about this? I have to do this today. You know, I have to whatever. Go to the cleaners. You know, you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. You know, all of a sudden you start thinking about going to the cleaners. I forgot to pick up my pants yesterday. You know, and then you start thinking, where's the ticket? You know what I mean? I know I had that ticket somewhere. I hate leaving my pants at this place. It's probably getting wrinkled there, stuck in the side. You know what I mean? I mean, you're three brachas later. You know, you remember where you put your ticket. And you go for it. You know, it's really hard. That's famous, whatever. It's very hard to remove from ourselves our involvement in Olam Hazeh for a minute at a time. It's extremely difficult. That's all of the avoda, and that's that's all the avoda of tefillah, to be able to do that and, you know, zoom into the words of tefillah. Lately, I've been davening from the Amud every day. You know, my father has been davening from the Amud. So, when you daven from the Amud, you have to daven fast. It's tremendous. You can't. No time to waste. You know, people are extremely impatient. You know, you take 2 seconds longer. Than let's go. You know, just snapping their finger. You know what I mean? Okay, let's go. You know what I mean? So you got to really, you got to move. Like, there's no, especially at Stiblach. You know what I mean? Yeah, I found a good place. You know, I have to try to find it's a big voter to try to find places where you can get the amulet, and you have to try to find places also where there are a lot of people who have chiyuvim there. So I think that the best place is some of these shtivach where you go, especially where there are a lot of young people davening, like, you know, near the Mir or, you know, near Brisk. So they have, because you have a few hundred bachrim davening in shtivach, and most bachrim aren't chiyuvim, they have parents bachrim. You know what I mean? Not old people and these types of things. So then you can get minyanim right. Fast, you know, you don't have to go right and go. But I'm still like, you know, let's go. So you got them. So as a result, when you go to Shemoneh Esrei, you really got to move, you know. And also when you say Shemoneh, you know, there's no time for every word. Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, you know, the whole time. But in truth, I was thinking about it. But the truth is that in a certain way it actually helps your kavanah, because when you daven slowly, your mind sort of drifts off. I don't know about you, but sometimes you know you take 15-minute davening and half the time you're sort of floating around. You know, like you're not focusing in on each word and going through. But sometimes when you daven fast, you can daven with better kavanah. Each word you're zooming in and you're going on. You know, like you can remain focused for a whole tefillah if you go fast and if you go slow. And so I think sometimes it actually, you know what I mean, there's a certain way of doing it that helps the tefillah.
You used to do that thing in Mikkel, and they used to do like one amida, like a few months or something, or every week was like a fast minute, like.
Yeah, if you go fast. Let's go. Anyway, the reason I'm saying is that it says that's for any spiritual thing, you have to, that's part of the avoda, to learn how to be able to leave this world behind and, you know, move on into deeper thoughts about things, words of the tefillah, zoom into them. When you're learning Torah, it's the same thing. A person, when you sit down for a Seder, so, you know, you're supposed to try to forget about everything but, you know, the Gemara and the Sugya that you're learning. That's already, then you're able to move on. That's not easier said than done, as we know. Anyway, so when people start speaking about all sorts of things in the middle of the Seder, you know what I mean? It ruins the Seder. You spend 15 minutes, 20 minutes in the Seder talking about where you can get cheaper diapers. You know what I mean? Things like that. So, anyway, so the angel comes and he says to Moshe, you know, take your shoes off. He's telling him you have to remove your vestment with the physical things on. You know, what he was, a shepherd, wanting, you know, forget about your sheep for a few minutes. You know, and take your shoes off and be machaven for ready for a deeper nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu apparently was successful in stage number 2 of prophecy. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Hashem himself comes and starts speaking to Moshe, appears to Moshe. He starts speaking to him. You know, first there was the bush, then there was the angel, and now the third stage of the nevuah at the Sneh. Rabbeinu Bachai explained all this. The third stage of the nevuah was Hashem himself comes. And then he starts speaking. Hashem starts speaking to Moshe after he takes his shoes off. Anochi Hashem Elokeinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. He starts, all of a sudden Hashem starts, I've seen what's happening in Mitzrayim, you know, and I'm going to save them and you're going to be the Mashiach. And he goes on and on, you know. Anyway, what we're discussing is like this. When Hashem appeared to Moshe finally in the end, so it says in the Pesukim, V'yaster Moshe's ponav, ki yore me'abid. What did Moshe do when Hashem all of a sudden appeared and started speaking to him? You know, he hid his face. Ki yore, he was afraid, me'abid. So, and the Mefushim explained that, why did he hide his face? So they say, there are three reasons why he hid his face. First of all, he was afraid to stand in the presence of Hashem. He felt not worthy of seeing Hashem. Who am I? You know, all of a sudden he's standing in the presence of Hashem. We don't know what this means because there's no reality to us. But when you're a prophet, all of a sudden you feel mamish that you're standing in the presence of a being who's perfect, you know, infinitely pure. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, who am I? Like I told you once, the Rebbetzin at Lakewood told us that when Aaron Cutler died, she was in the room. It was his daughter-in-law. And she saw that when he died, all of a sudden the room filled with light. She saw like a glittering in the room, like she never said anything like it before. At the time that he died, inshallah, powerful. So she said it, instinctively she already went, she looked away, and she felt immediately like, who am I to see something like that? Who am I to see something? It's not, you know. So she said, it's like a...
Who died?
Aaron Cutler. That's what she told me.
Wow.
Who am I to see something? I'm nothing. You know, there's a certain feeling of overwhelmed by something of such purity that, you know, who knows, when Manoach saw an angel, which is a lower level, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see an angel. But you know what happens when, you know, Manoach, when Shimson's father, you know, one day Shimson's mother was walking, you know, all of a sudden this guy comes up to her and says, listen, I want you to know, you know, don't eat wine, you know, can't even be going to grazing. You're going to have a son as a result, and he also is going to be a nazir, etc. She didn't know what to do, so she goes to her husband. She goes, I saw this guy. This is what he told me. She goes, where is he? Who is this guy coming and telling my wife these things? And they didn't have any children. All of a sudden, this guy comes up and says, you're going to have a child, but you can't eat grapes, can't drink wine, and heal it. So she brings her husband out, and the husband goes, and this guy comes again. And repeats the same thing. Your wife's going to have a baby. And she says, oh, they must be like a choshev person. And was this? So they decided, okay, gets together. And they decide to make him something to eat, so they make a fire. They make this fire, and all of a sudden, this guy just like stands up into the middle of the fire and he disappears like into an ace, you know. So all of a sudden, Manoach sees this guy, and he realizes that he was an angel he was talking to. So he starts yelling to his wife, "We're gonna die! We're gonna die! We saw an angel! We're gonna die!" You know what I mean? His wife goes back, "What do you mean we're gonna die? If we're gonna die, why would he come and tell me we're gonna have a baby? It can't be that he'd come until we die. It must be that we're gonna live. No, we're gonna die." You know, that's that whole. Wow. Kitzur, it's not so easy to see angels. You know what I mean? We don't appreciate these things, but. So Moshe Rabbeinu covering his face, you know, overwhelmed, like Yeshaya, and all of a sudden Hashem comes to him, you know, I want you to be a Navi. So he said, what? Who could I be a Navi? I'm not worthy. My lips aren't pure. You know, takes a coal off of his mizbeach, puts it to his lips to purify. A person feels unworthy, Moshe, when you're exposed to that purity. You know? So he looks away, like, who am I to see? I'm not worthy to see such things. Not only that, the second reason they say that he was afraid was because he was afraid that he wouldn't be able to grasp, that he didn't have the mind to be able to understand properly what Hashem was going to say to him. He's afraid. I mean, you know, who's to say that you have the ability to understand it? And if Hashem tells you something and you don't get it right, you're in big trouble. You know what I mean? You got to say it over right. You got to understand it. It's not so easy to understand what's going on over here. Hashem's speaking to you. You got to figure it out. You know, sometimes they have these prophecies, and you know you see that they aim the prophecy like one part. One of the Haftarahs, the Navi. So he sees all of a sudden this prophetic vision of a big menorah, and then Hashem sends an angel. You know, the angel asks him, what do you see? He goes, I see a menorah. He goes, what are you supposed to get out of it? He goes, I don't know. You tell me. You know, and the angel and him are going back and forth trying to figure out how to understand this vision. You know, we're limited, our minds. Who says we could understand what Hashem is trying to say? Prabhupada said he was afraid to look, become a Navi, and understand. Maybe I'll distort the truth that's being told me. And then I'm going to go and tell it to somebody else. Life depends on it. I don't understand it properly. And then he didn't want to look also because he was afraid that even if he had a solid, strong mind, you know, who is it? Hashem is infinitely deep. You know, who can grasp what Hashem really wants in this world? So he looked away. He looked away. Hit his face. Wait for it. Now, that was before Matan Torah and before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, a few years later, Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to this mountain, right?
That was 2 years later?
How many years later? 2 years? Yetzias Mitzrayim was 1 year, right?
3 reasons.
What? 3 reasons.
The
first one was that he just felt like he was unworthy to be next to Hashem. The second one was is that he worried about that his mind wasn't strong enough to grasp it. And the first thing, the third thing was that Hashem was too deep to be grasped. So the Marsha explains. So the a few years later, I don't know, a year later, a year and a half later, Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to this mountain, and Hashem gives him Torah in the same place where he had this vision about the snare. So Hashem goes back there, and there he gives him Matan Torah. I'm getting there, Hashem. Hope. And after Matan Torah, so there's the Chet Egel, and Am Yisrael, after Matan Torah, end up going back to idol worship. We weren't able to maintain our belief in Hashem more than a few days. You know, we sink back to idol worship that we have from Egypt already. Hard to believe. And then Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Chet Egel, goes up And he davens to Kodesh Baruch Hu to try to bring back Hashem into among our, you know, among us. He should dwell with us again. He's trying to reestablish Am Yisrael as being a nation, that Hashem will dwell with us openly, with miracles, and everybody will see us and Hashkacha through us. And he's trying to reinstate that vision of what Am Yisrael is supposed to be, a nation close to Hashem. Just open their mouths and Hashem will answer their prayers. And the Shekhinah back with us. And it comes to a tremendous period of rachamim. And Hashem starts revealing all sorts of things after the chet that he never revealed before in this world. Yud Yom Midot. And it was, you know, the tshuva of Moshe was up in the mountain and all of Klal Yisrael are doing tshuva below. And people are crying and davening all day. And, you know, the whole Am had a tremendous yisoros after the chet ha'egel. And everybody was, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was up and the doors and the Shemayim were swinging open and Hashem was telling the Yigil Aminos HaRachamim and revealing himself. Moshe Rabbeinu at that time, he decides that it's time to ask Hashem that he should see him in a much deeper way than he ever did before. So he says, Hareini Noas Kvodecha, Hashem, show me your glory. Show me who you are. I want to know you. I want to see you. Already know as kvodecha. I don't want to just see how you act in this world. I want to know you yourself, Hashem. Show us who you are. You know. So Hashem says to him, "You can't see my face and live." He says, "No. I love you." It sounds like. And the Gemara goes into this answer. Why did Hashem say no to Moshe Rabbeinu? Pashup Shad is, there's giving a reason that Hashem is saying, I would love to show you my face, only yeah, if I do, you're going to die. Ramesh, angels, maybe not, but nobody can see Hashem's face and continue to live in this world. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, once you see Hashem's face, you're finished from all of us. Pashtus, simple pshat would be that a person, after you saw Hashem directly, would never be able to enter back into all of us. You know what I mean? Who would come back into this world if you saw Hashem directly? You know, think how much trouble Reb Shimon Bar Yochai had, you know, coming out of his cave. You know, he was there in the cave. There was just with an angel, and who knows with Elio learning Zohars. You know what I mean? But that was enough for him for a few years. You know, he comes out, and he couldn't get into Olam Hazeh again. He just burned up the whole world. He couldn't have, he didn't have any way of grasping how people could work for a living anymore. You know, be farmers and, you know, spend 3 hours trying to get a rock out of the mud in your field so you can, you know, he just couldn't get it anymore. And Hashem said, "All right, go back to my cave. You know, go back to your cave, Shimon. Back to your cave." So it was hard for him to accept. How much more so if a person saw Hashem's face? You never drag a person after that into Olam Hazeh. It's a person, you know, you just can't do it. You can't do it. Yeah, the Havdil, you know, there used to be this writer, who was it? I don't know, I think I'll leave that example out. Anyway, but the Gemara says something else over here. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he asked, "Let me see your face, you know, let me show me your glory," so he says something like this. "Listen," says Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, "a few years ago, on this very same place, I was ready to show you everything about myself. I was ready to show you all of my glory, you know. And what did you do when I wanted to show you my glory? You looked away. You said, I don't want to see. And you looked away." Says, "And I was ready to do it. You didn't want to see. Because now you're coming to ask me to show you now? Now I don't want. I'm sorry. When I wanted, you didn't want to look. So now you want, I don't want to look." That's what Hashem was saying. "When I wanted, you didn't want. So now you want, I don't want. You know, me to connect me to you. Why should I show myself? I have a relationship. You don't want to be with me. I don't want to be with you." So, says the Gemara. The Gemara says it's really interesting. The Gemara writes that Hashem is really giving Moshe Rabbeinu Musa. He's criticizing him. How could it be that he didn't want, you know, you looked away. Here, Hashem was ready to give you everything over there. He's willing to show you all his greatness. And what did he do? He looked away. He didn't see. He lost his chance. How could he have looked away? I see. How could he have not looked and seen a Baruch Hu?
He wasn't at that Madrega yet.
What?
He wasn't at that Madrega.
So, we have to figure out, I mean, Pashtus is that he was being an Onov, you know. He was humble. What's the matter? Why not? He was afraid. Who am I to see Hashem? You know, who am I to look at him? Maybe I'll misunderstand him. I'll never be able to grasp what he's saying, you know. And comes the Kodesh Baruch Hu afterwards and says, you know something? Yeah, you really blew it.
Wow.
Why didn't you look? I wanted to look. I wanted to show myself to you. I was going to reveal to you all the secrets of the universe. Yeah, and you're doubting yourself, and you're saying, "Who am I? If I come and say I'm going to give you these things, so take it already. What's the matter with you? That's too much. Don't be such a humble person. You know, too much an ava already. Who am I? What do you mean, who am I? You're Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, it's like the Taina the Navi has on show. Hakot nata beinefa. What are you, small in your eyes? Says the Shaul Melech. Tamelech Yisrael, you're acting like some little person, you know. Tamelech Yisrael. What are you looking at yourself like you're still some sort of a farmer or shepherd somewhere? What's the matter with you? There are times in life where we limit ourselves by our own self-doubt. You know, who am I? If the opportunity is there, sometimes you have to go for things in life. And that's part of taking your shoe off. You have to transcend your own recognition of your limitation. There are 20 stories about yourself you haven't even thought of yet. If I'm coming to you and offering you to show you all the secrets of the universe, that means that I must know that there's something there that you don't know about yourself, right? And you should try to grasp what I'm trying to do. Why did you look away? What's the matter with you? It's one in the chayim that sometimes we have to. Many of our limitations in life are self-limitations. We think, this is who I am, and because that's who I am, therefore I can't do X and X and X. And we're all wrong about what we're going to do. Who says we're right? So, Had a guy I knew once. He was a very bright, talented guy. And he learned at Rosh Hashanah for a while. A little bit close to Moshe Shapira. And it was a time when Rav Hutner was still alive. You know Rav Hutner? If you're going to. You know Rav Hutner? So, Rav Hutner, anybody know who Rav Hutner is? You know Rav Hutner? Yitzhak Hutner? He was very great. Mashkiach, Rosh Hashiva. Rosh Hashiva Chaim Berlin in America. Very deep person. Bahashkoff, a very good son. Fantastic human being. And this guy, Rav Hutner, this gadol, he heard about this bachur. And he said he heard that he was a really good person. So Rav Hutner said, you know, bring him to me, I'll learn with him. And he offered to learn with this guy. This Baruch Hu has been learning about 3 years. And, you know, one of the Gedolei Ador came and offered to learn with him. And when this guy heard that Rav Hutner asked to learn with him, you know what the guy said? He said like this. He said, Rav Hutner is asking to learn with me? Yeah. I've only been learning 3 years. I've never even been able to understand. I'm not ready to learn with Rav Hutner or with Gedolei. I'm not even able to grasp what he's going to teach me. Because I need more time. Because I'm going to take another year to learn. And then, after another year, I'll be able to learn with Rav Hutner, you know, and I'll be able to get something of him. Who am I to learn with him now? I need more time, you know. So he told me he wanted to get ready to meet him, to take a year and study to get ready. And Rav Hutner died after about 3 or 4 months, something like that, or 6 months. He never made it to that next year. And, you know, the person lost an opportunity to have a chavrusa with the Gadol HaDor, you know, which probably would have changed his whole life. You know. He lost the opportunity to do it. And why did he lose it? Who am I to have a chavrusa with such a person? What am I? You fool! What do you mean, who are you? Yeah, he's offering you a chavrusa with a gadol ador, and you're asking me, who am I? What do you mean, who are you? Forget about yourself and just learn. Now's the time. What are you doubting yourself for? Move on, you know, this one is now. Often these types of things, it's called a false anava. That it's not anava at all, it's actually an inability to grasp our own potentials, the chayim, you know. As a result, we limit ourselves so much. What do you mean? And Sam says, you know, when I want, you don't want. No, you want. I don't want. And meaning Parshas, maybe Hashem is saying to Moshe, look, you asked me to see my face. I already tried this once. And you weren't able to take it. You weren't able to take it. But the reason why you weren't able to take speaking to me isn't because you weren't able to take it, you weren't great enough. You were great enough. The reason why you weren't able to take seeing me is because you just didn't believe that you had the ability to actually see me. It wasn't anything objective. So I'm telling you now, I'm not going to show yourself away. It didn't work once. Why should I show myself to you again? Taka, you won't be able to continue. You have to perfect it. You have to move on to a higher level of anava, which means that you're able to grasp, that you're able to forget about yourself completely. So that's his musar about Moshe. Why did you look away? I want to reveal myself to you. You know, Chazal say that, you know, we're getting ready for Shavuos already, you know, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to reveal himself to the nations of the world, so he went to, you know, Yishmael, I'm going to give you the Torah, it's incredible. Well, Shmuel says, what's in it, you know, don't steal, I can't do it. You know, Esav, I'm going to give you the Torah, reveal to you all the Yisodos of the world, what's in it, no Sirtzach, don't kill, I can't do it. So the Farshim say, what was Esav saying? I can't do it. You say, you know, Esav has said like this. I'm a warrior, you know. Al-Harb Chatichia, my job is to run fight wars. That's how I live. And you wanna start teaching me about Lo Sirtzach, don't kill. You know. And then I have to worry about every human life killed unnecessarily. Give me a job. Give me a break. You know, what general wants to worry about every human life that falls unnecessarily? You go further, like they used to. The Russians used to do. They wanted to clear a minefield. They used to. How do they clear a minefield? You take a battalion of soldiers and run them through, and you clear the minefield. And you go on. A few hundred get blown up. Good. But you win the battle that way. You know, that's how they used to fight. So don't start giving up. We can't do it. You know. And Esav, you know, I'm a businessman. Don't start talking to me about Lo Sidnov. You know, every pruta that you take unnecessarily, you're doing something wrong and you have to pay for it. Give me a break. Every person in business knows that. You know, get kickbacks and this and that. It's enough for me. We don't have the ability to keep these kind of things. Well, we can't do it. It's not true. So when he came to Christ, Bnei Israel, what did they say? They said, you know, they didn't ask if they could do it. They said, Hashem wants to give us the Torah. We're taking it. We're taking it. We want it. And that we want it was considered to be an incredible thing, you know. That we were able to realize that the Torah that we grasp is going to give us the capacity to keep it. Who's to say, good, granted right now you can't keep the Torah, but who's to say you'll always be that way? Why, if Hashem wants to give you the Torah, maybe Hashem will give you the ability to keep it as well. Grab onto it, and it'll carry you. It'll give you the ability to keep it. That's the idea of the Aranose Esnosom, you know, that people used to carry the ark in the desert. So they hold on to it, you know, and it looks as if they're holding the ark, but really whatever, they weren't really carrying the ark. They grabbed onto the pole. As soon as they grabbed onto the pole, the ark carried them. That's how it worked. That's how it worked when Yeshua went into the Eretz Yisrael, right? Everybody crossed the Yarden. The Kohanim, you know, they stepped in the water. The river split. Everybody starts going through. Then everybody passes. Then the Yardenim step out of the water. The river goes back. Then they grab onto the ark, and the ark just flies with these Kohanim holding onto the ark over the heads of all of Am Yisrael, you know, these flying, and then they go, or is holding it, puts them down in the front, and they go on. It doesn't have to show everybody that they weren't, nobody carries the ark. Whoever grabs onto the poles, all of a sudden the ark just picks them up off the ground, and you go. And that's, but them is true, that the Torah gives us the ability to keep it, because we have potentials we're unaware of. And as soon as somebody wants, say, all right, Hashem wants to give me the Torah, I'm going to take it. Yeah, maybe I won't have the ability to do it. Trusting in Hashem that if He wants to give me this Torah, I'm not going to say no and worry about myself. And who's to say that my capacities are limited? You move on, and in life you get new capacities. You're able to go further. Through commitment, you gain new capacities. You grab on, and you gain and do things you didn't realize you could do. So, and that was the greatness of Nasa Nisha. It's the same idea that we were able to not be like Moshe Ben and look away. Hashem says, you want the Torah? We'll take it. As far as we didn't know whether we could do it or not, we didn't stop. We didn't ask. Kodesh Baruch Hu, we trusted in Hashem out of love. The Torah itself will give us the ability to keep it. And that's important in life in general, that if you have an opportunity, you commit yourself to it, and through the commitment, trust in Hashem, you have the, you gain the opportunity, the ability to do things in life. Person, you know, that's the chaim, so we have to live sometimes. It's going to do it. Go further. Anyway, that's the, you know, how the Gemara begins over here. You want it, I didn't want it. Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes Moshe Rabbeinu for looking away. How could he look away? Now the Gemara goes on, however, and whatever. A lot of times people do things like that. You know, it's sort of common. People have situations in life. They can't make a commitment. Sometimes a new guy wants to, was, you know, already get married, and a girl like her, and then in the end he could never make a commitment. He was always backing out, and in the end the reason he was backing out was because he felt that he wouldn't. He said, "Who am I? I'm never going to be able to marry properly." And he came from a bad family. I don't even know what a good family is. So I'm going to do it. I don't have that. I can't put this girl through it. He gave you a whole long list. You know, can't do it. You know, and the answer is look. Opportunities there. Move on. You got to commit and grab on, and you'll get the ability to do it. You'll get the ability to do it. What's your problem? If you feel that, you know, you need skills, so get skills. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you need help from somebody to get skills because you weren't exposed to certain things. But this thing that intrinsically you can't do anything. What are you going to spend your life in? Running away from? You have to something. Just move on and trust that Hashem will give us capacities to go. That's the whole basis of Matan Torah. You know, that comes. That's the whole thing. Shavuos. You have to accept, try to do things. Says Hashem will do. The author of Navarro used to say that I never asked. You know, what I could do, I asked what needed to be done, and something needed to be done, I did it. That's what he used to say. Something needed to be done, I did it. Yeah, I didn't ask her, well, maybe I won't be able to try. I try. I'm going to try and go through. If I fail, what fail? I told this, I was speaking about this one-to-one to the to girl at the vein. That's a little, I was speaking about this point. There was one girl in the class who, like, she couldn't let me off the hook of her. She kept on saying, but how could a person, like, try to do things that maybe they'll fail? You know what I mean? Like, how could you tell a person that they should try to do things if they don't feel like they can do it? I mean, then you'll fail and you'll be disappointed. She couldn't get this. She was so upset about this. How could Hashem tell Moshe that he shouldn't have looked? He worried about himself. Maybe he would distort it. I mean, you know what I mean? Maybe he'll fail. What's that?
The girls are so different.
She was like, really worried. Maybe he'll fail. Then everybody got upset also. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, it's so not nice. I mean, you know, like, he really wanted good. Why is Hashem saying, you know, now you want, I'm not going to give to you? I mean, how could Hashem treat him that way? And then that was a big crime. You know what I mean? Like, he was so, just like, I feel so bad for him. I mean, he meant well and he didn't look away. And now Hashem isn't going to appear when he's asking just because, even if he made a mistake. You know what I mean? Like, I feel so bad for him, you know. I just fine, it's okay. He's really fixing. He's giving him the ability to get more. You know, yeah. But how could you tell him that? You know, like. Anyway, it's a question. There you go. Anyway, that's when Ranover. There's another Ranover who argues on this point. It says the Gemara, and this is certainly confuses girl because another Ranover just comes and says the exact opposite shot over here on the Gemara. The next Ranover, Rabbi Yonasan, here in the Gemara. He says, what are you talking about? He says, Rabbi Yonasan, you're wrong. He says, all of the spiritual greatness that Moshe Rabbeinu got in the rest of his life, he got because he looked away when he came to that, when Hashem appeared to him at the burning bush. And you know, it says later on, after these psukim, he says, if you can't see my face, live, and after these psukim, so then it says that, you know, after the Echad, so Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and all of a sudden he sees people running away from him, you know, running away. And, you know, he realizes he has this shining face, Karne Yehov, flying away, you know, his face in a 250 watt light bulb, looking at Moshe Rabbeinu, like looking into the light bulb on the table. And everybody's running away. The Gemara says, this is right afterwards, says the Gemara, why did Moshe Rabbeinu get such a face? Like, how did he get such a face like that? That face means that his soul came into his body. Most of us, the Forshim say, our neshama is like hovering over the head somewhere, you know, we kind of talked about it. Most of us, our soul doesn't really, we have a nefesh and a ruach, and the neshama doesn't really exist inside the goof. The body isn't pure enough to have the neshama there. So the neshama exists outside of the body. So every once in a while, it'll like touch your brain, then you'll get incredible einfalls, you'll get incredible epiphanies, thoughts, you'll get inspirations. I got it! That's like the neshama is touching your brain, it's just grabbing it. But usually the neshama is floating up above, it doesn't come into the body, most of us. And then the chayni chinar, up in shemayim somewhere, you can't. But in life, the more you purify yourself, so they write, the more you're able to sort of pull it down into the goop, the purer your body is, the more your soul can enter that body. It's a clown. So the more purification you're able to obtain in this world, the more soul is able to enter into it, and then the more spiritual you become, and you get all sorts of different powers and things like that. So, Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, he reached the level whereby, a spiritual level, whereby his neshama was able to come into his goof. And because of that, flying off of his head, So Gemara asks, how did Moshe Rabbeinu do such a thing? How did he get such a face? So he answers the Gemara, on the schus that Moshe Rabbeinu covered his face when Hashem appeared to him at the snare, because of that, he got this glowing face. Because he covered his face on that source, so his face began to glow. all came from that fact that he looked away. That was the key. And on the schus, the people were running away from him. You know, how did he get to a level? Everybody saw Moshe Rabbeinu. They were afraid of Moshe Rabbeinu like they were afraid of seeing an angel, it says. People saw Moshe Rabbeinu, and they were afraid of him, but it doesn't mean they're afraid he's going to kill them, you know what I mean? He's a mugger, you know. They were afraid of Moshe Rabbeinu, like an awe. You ran away from him like you saw, they were door like you're seeing an angel. Seeing Moshe Rabbeinu was like having a prophetic experience, they said. You know, so the Gemara says, how did Moshe Rabbeinu be Zohar? And as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu influenced so many people. He put them in a state of awe. Moshe says, how did Moshe Rabbeinu do that? He says, on the schus that he was afraid to look at Hashem. Because of that, other people became afraid of looking at him. And Mehabit, that Moshe Rabbeinu, first he covered his face. It says there are three things. He covered his face. And he was afraid, and he didn't look. He didn't want to look. There are two different madrigas. One is covering the face, and one is not looking. Right. So it's the Quran, the schus that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't look at Hashem. On that schus, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Utmunas Hashem Yabid." Moshe Rabbeinu was the only navi. You know, when Moshe separated from his wife, so Miriam and Aaron got angry at him. Who are you? Who is he to do such a thing? And it's causing tzar to his wife, and it's excessive religiosity. You know what I mean? What is he? Some turning into some sort of, you know, celibate type of person. He separates from his wife. What type of religion is this? We don't believe in, you know, monasteries. I mean, why is Moshe Rabbeinu becoming celibate, separating from his wife for it to be a prophet? It's not our way. It bothered them. It bothered Miriam and Aaron. So Hashem all of a sudden appears to them and says, who are you to talk about Moshe? You think you're on the same level? Moshe Rabbeinu, he's much greater than you. Yeah? Why? Moshe Rabbeinu, we call Basie Naaman, and he wanders wherever he wants through my house. Not like you. He can pick up the phone and speak to me anytime he wants. Most prophets, yeah, you know what they have to do to try to get Hashem? Is to go through the things and bring music and concentrations and kavanas. And then maybe Hashem will speak to them, maybe not. You can never control that Hashem will speak to you. You hope and you dive in for rachamim, and then you do all of that. And then sometimes Hashem would descend upon them. Something that you never knew. They never knew when Hashem would appear to them either. You could never control it. It was out of a person's control that Hashem would speak to you. Sometimes he did, though. You just tried. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was the only prophet who could speak to Hashem whenever he wanted. Somebody would ask him, I have a question. So wait, I'll ask Hashem. Go on, Hashem. Hashem says this. Yeah. He was the only one who ever could do that. He could speak to Hashem at will. He had like an open line to Hashem. That means that he was completely dovek to Hashem. He was open to Hashem continually. 24 hours a day, he was in a state of constant prophecy. Most of us sink down, have to rise up to prophecy again. Moshe Rabbeinu was in a state of constant prophecy 24 hours a day. He was continually connected to Hashem. He never disconnected. It's like you have your emails on, you know. You connect in, right? And it's like on, right? And then you turn it off, right? So, you know, and it keeps on going. First you have to connect. Moshe Rabbeinu was always connected. He was connected to Hashem all of his life. Because of that, he was separated. He had to separate from his wife. Couldn't find any type of tumor or any type of tumor. He was in a constant, he never knew when Hashem was going to speak to him. He was constantly there. And they say that Moshe Rabbeinu, he was able to see things. Most people, prophets, when they saw Hashem, they saw, you know, through a glass darkly, so to speak. You know, you see a glass, this opaque glass, and you see sort of a figure on the other side, and you can't really exactly see what you see. Most prophets, they would get they would see, you know, like these angels, they would see animals like Daniel, these lower prophets, you know, these wild visions of all sorts of crazy animals and faces and menorahs and things like that. But they didn't see Hashem himself. Hashem communicated to them by sending these strange symbolic visions into the face. That's how most prophecy worked. They saw symbolic visions. And the prophets had to analyze these symbolic visions. Moshe didn't have any visions. He saw Hashem himself. Hashem told him straight off what he wanted, without visions. And he was able to see Hashem's midot, clear, everything clear. So the Gemara asks, why was Moshe able to see Hashem, dinner of all the prophets, because he didn't look at him. Then he was able to see him. Because he covered his face, he got a shining face. Because he was afraid, people were afraid of him. Because he didn't look at Hashem, he was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So
how come he didn't merit then seeing Hashem at the end, like a year later, then if it was right for him to turn away?
Because there he has to learn the Gemara. The Gemara is willing to show him everything except his face, because there he was asking for a level that he would have to leave this world to do. It's like 50th level. He was asking for something that no physical person could grasp. The very fact that he was physical meant he couldn't reach that level of revelation. It was a higher level he was trying to get to. So he said, you can only see that once you lose your body altogether. As long as you have a connection to all of his day, it's not possible. It's quite... Now the question is on this scroll, what's the pshat on this? What does it mean that because he covered his face, therefore he was able to have a shining face? Because he looked away, it's all paradoxical, right? Because he didn't see Hashem, he gained the ability to see him. Because he looked away, because he covered his face became Hashem. You know, because he was afraid, others were afraid of him. You know, it's paradoxical, right? So what's the pshat? Anybody know? What's the pshat that since he covered his face, he was able to see? What do you think? Pshat? I say sometimes a good teacher is someone like, how long will you wait before somebody comes with an answer? Like, some teachers were like, you wait like 30 seconds and move on. Like, we had one teacher who'd ask a question, you know, and he would sit and wait for 5 minutes until people got so uncomfortable, forced to say something. You know, like, a few seconds matter, but you know, wait. They get so quiet, you know, people get so uncomfortable. I must have something, you know. He covered his face, he's able to see.
Well, just like I said, like when, you know, if you want kavod, you gotta run away from it. So kind of like the same principle applies. Like if you want something, you gotta.
So he hid himself.
What?
He hid himself, right? So he hid himself in right. His shami face, and that's what people did to him. So it's like a mita k'neged and mita.
Yeah, but why, since he hid himself from Hashem, why does that mean? Therefore, his face began to glow. And what's the? Why should your face glow? Because you cover your face.
Somehow, like he was very humble, so then he really made it than to say it.
Right. So I'll tell you the few ways you could learn here. I'll tell you how there are a few different approaches I thought of. The first thing that I thought of when I read this was like this: that we're speaking here about we're speaking here about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, it's really part of the value of tzniut, you know. That's part of his abilities that, you know, he covered himself. Didn't look, but he covered his face up. So Chazal say that that's part of the step, covering yourself is, you know, part of the step of growing spiritually, because that's the idea, like, you know, different types of coverings. We spoke once that, well, let me just, I'll explain you what I want to say. They say that the tznius is always the concept that you cover your external self in order so that you realize that there's, you get in touch with your soul and a deeper part of your personality, right? That's what tznius is all about. For women and for men, that when a person is tznu, it's a way of saying to himself that, I'm not my body, but, you know, as I say, we cover ourselves so that we're able to see that there's more to me than meets the eye. Covering it, that's what sneeze is all about. You know, the way of saying there's more to me than meets the eye. It's a person. I'm not my body in and of itself. I'm much more than that. You know? And that's necessary in order to grow, to develop the soul, bring the soul into the body. You have to recognize that you're not your body. And therefore, it's necessary, dafka, to cover yourself up, to reveal the soul and put it in a way that can be seen. A person has to live with modesty. That's what modesty is all about. It's, you know. So Moshe, the fact that Gemara is saying that he covered his face, so as a result of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his face began to glow. He brought his soul down into his body. But that's the concept of covering. It's like, who am I? But he's being mevatel himself, really, but in a positive way. So that's not me, you know. I have to leave my external self behind in order to be in touch now with my deeper soul. And as a result of that process, he was able to shine. There's another pshat over here as well. That's what I first thought. I didn't like that pshat so much, because it sounds to me like the covering of the face here isn't really for tzniut so much. You know what I mean? Even though the Gemara divides between not looking and covering the face, but it sounds like the covering face is really something. It's the fact that he didn't want to see Hashem, not that he was just covering his face so that he didn't want to be seen, you know, like Rachel later. Anyway, so another pshat I thought here is also important. And, you know, that's a talmud we spoke about once. Remember we spoke about angels, that angels have six wings. Angels have six wings. I don't know if we spoke about it. We have to stop already. I'll finish with this. Angels have six wings. So the Gemara is more fortunate. Why do they need six wings? They need two wings to cover their face when they fly close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They shouldn't be burned up. And the top two wings are to cover their face. They shouldn't be burned up when they fly too close to Hashem. The bottom two wings, they're to cover their bodies when they fly. And the middle two wings to fly. So they write, there's also an interesting thing about these six wings. Those six wings, by the way, they refer to Baruch Hashem, Kavod, Malchus, Olam, which we have six words. And those are the six words. Six wings of the angels. Anyway, we're going right. But the top two wings, yeah, that's to keep the angels from flying too high and getting burned up. Right? And the idea is that it's very important in life that sometimes you have to know what to look at and what not to look at. If you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to reveal things to us. But if a person isn't able to know what he should look at and what not, and that you shouldn't look at things that are higher than your level, so in the end you'll never develop properly. And that's a challenge in life, that sometimes we expose ourselves to things that we can't integrate. And whenever you see things that you can't integrate properly, it damages you and stops, it hinders your spiritual development. It's not prime, it's not good for you. That's why it says, four entered the Pardes, remember we spoke about it. Three of them went crazy, one died young. Came in Apikoras, and Rabbi Kivi came out. They said because they looked at things that were too deep for them. And it put so much pressure on them that they couldn't survive. Couldn't survive. You see a vision, you learn about Lashon Hara, you learn the Zohar. And you see a vision, and a person speaks Lashon Hara, it puts out millions of lights shining in all sorts of spiritual worlds. This one goes out. Now we don't have the ability to control our mouths. You go crazy. I can't do it, you know. I can never live like this, I can't. You know how hard it is? Once you start controlling your speech, it drives you crazy. You know, have you ever tried to stop yourself saying like this? You know what I mean? There's certain people, you know, you say you know. You know what I mean? And it's always, you know, do you always say, you know, you always say the word, you know? You know what I mean, you know. So then you try to stop yourself and you start watching what you speak. It's very difficult, just trying to stress on a person. So you know that, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? That every time you say a word that's not proper, you're putting out millions of lights, leaving the world in darkness, and people are getting sick as a result, and everything. And the knowledge you believe is true, it drives you crazy because you can't stop talking and you don't have the midas, you don't have the midot that allow you to see that kind of stuff. So what's the answer? You should look away. You have to know. Rabbi Akiva is able to do it, but if you're not Rabbi Akiva, who says you have to know these things? In life, you have to know. You can't look away. You have to. We grow in life and develop ourselves by knowing that we try to learn things that we can integrate, and information, even though we need certain things just to inspire us a little bit, but information that's going to be too deep for us, Yeah, and you can't integrate, so you have to know how to look away for this thing. You shouldn't fly too high. There's one type of tzniyas. And the other type of tzniyas is that the other two wings, that they cover the body, that's why you shouldn't sink too low. You shouldn't sink too low. We cover ourselves up. You shouldn't think, that that's me. It's, you spend so much time on your body, that's me. Who am I? I'm my muscles. That's me. These people, these bodybuilders, That's what they identify as being who they are. They get value because they have these big biceps, as if that's them. Body isn't you. Body is you are inside your body. It's not you. For that, we need sniyud. Shouldn't fall too low. And then you fly. So Moshe Rabbeinu over here, he covered his face. Because when Hashem revealed himself to him, he knew enough to decide certain things I look at, certain things not. Because of that, he was zocha to get him and bring the neshama inside his goof in the end, to grow and to develop. He's able to grab Hashem's light and integrate it in life. So it is in Torah. To find out what I can do and learn material that can change you and integrate and work in that place, and then you're zocher to develop. Sneer is too high, not too low.
You say that's a type of sneer?
There's a type of sneer, so not looking at certain things that you should look at. There's certain things you shouldn't look at, like better not to see.
Right.
You're supposed to look in the eyes of Rishonim either. There's certain things you shouldn't look at. You have to know. You have to know in life that there are certain things, you look at certain things, not certain things are too high for you, certain things are too low.
In what way is that sneers? Just knowing your level, not thinking.
Sneer, that's kind of sneers. It's a type of, shmira say no. But here, it's not seeing things above you. Normal sneers is the bottom two wings. That's, I want to make sure I shouldn't fall too low. I want to protect my recognition that I'm not my physical self, but really my personality and my soul is inside. That's really who I am. I never, it's not me, my body. I would break my arm. It doesn't change me, really. It's something I use. That's the lower level. The higher level is that you have to know what to look at in life and what not. You have to not go above your level too much. It's explicit. Moshe looked away. Anyway, I don't have time to finish the shir. There's much more to say on the second time, but anyway, he spoke long enough. It's Friday morning. I really shouldn't speak for so long. But Kitzur. So they have this argument over here. Yeah, the first one says that we started most of this year, that we shouldn't sell ourselves short and limit ourselves sometimes in life. Moshe Ben is Christian. Why didn't you look? I'm willing to give you everything. How can you have looked away? The Putner comes and asks to learn with you. Go for it! Who am I?